And so I don't know if you, if we really have as many. When I started this journey to plant Mosaic, I was, I thought the same thing. But then when I began to get to know the city, I realized that the church is dying in this city. And so literally all the other churches are just fighting for the same people. And they just kind of move around, you know. And so that's why we really need more churches, you know. It stimulates desire for mission, because naturally a church plant, you have to get people. You can't just be content, you know. And so, yeah. But there's other reasons.
Who else want to swing at that?
Full disclosure, I have not planted a church. So just to put that out there. But why am I passionate about church planting, and why is it important? When you look, even so, you take the city of Memphis, for example, born and raised here, that's where I'm from. And you talk about it as you look up statistics, whatever. Memphis has more churches per capita than any other city in the, any other major city in the country, of all of America, more churches per capita. And when you do the math, my boss, who's a lot, who's just brilliant, did the math on it and like added it up. And if there's, you know, 500,000 people in Memphis proper and about 1 million people in the metro area, if you added up all of the seats and all of the church buildings, and I think Ali makes a great point when he says that the church is not a building, the church is people. But if you, even if you added up all the seats and all the churches in all of Memphis, you're looking at like, you know, 10 to 20% of the entire population of Memphis. So you're talking 100,000, 200,000 seats in a city of 1 million people. And so why, I mean, the easy answer to me is, like, why do we need more churches in light of the fact that we have so many old churches is because there's more people to reach, like you said. And inherently, the gospel propels us to mission. And so as our hearts have been captivated by Christ, as we've been like, I mean, you read that in the New Testament, these people whose hearts have been captivated by who Jesus is, and they've caught this just fire to go do something, to go tell people about the goodness and graciousness of Jesus. Like, as their Jesus calls them into a family, and then literally, and that family is the church. And so as that's like the natural progression. So why do we plant churches? Because the natural progression is, as people become believers, they need to become part of a church. That's you know what God has done.
Yeah, one of the things I would add is that you have to be careful with the word church, that society, especially Southern society, has commandeered that word. And so when you look around at churches, you have to ask yourself, what is a church? And so if you believe the gospel, then the gospel narrowly defines what a church is. And so you might drive by a lot of buildings that say church on them, but if they're not preaching the gospel, then they're not an actual church. And that's unfortunate, and I know how judgmental that sounds, but as elders of the church, I mean, we're supposed to defend the doctrines of the church. And so that narrowly defines what a church is. And the New Testament dealt with this all the time. In Memphis, there's a really, really cool organization called the Shalom Project. So I represent Living Hope. And one of the ways that we looked for a location to plant, I wasn't a part of it. I inherited the vision. But they use like dozens of criteria in order to determine where there are gospel gaps in the city. And the Shalom Project does that. It's really cool. And so, yeah, I would just adding to that, there's an organic nature of it. The more disciples made, the more churches that are needed. I think that we have to recommandeer and defend the word church based on the gospel. And then I would also say that there's a really neat aspect to sharpening one another. And so even though we're not all that different geographically, we're all creating new methods of church planting, new methods of discipleship. And while I don't think we would say we're competing, like, I need these brothers to to make sure I'm staying sharp and my elders are staying sharp in what we're doing. So I think that's a piece.
So let's go to this next question. We're going to start off with Drew. Why should the average Christian be concerned about church planting? I mean, most of the people in this room won't become a church planter per se. And what type of ramifications does the church really have on everyday life and culture and society?
Yeah, I would say two things. First of all, I think church planting is essentially important, and every Christian should care, because the church is God's plan A for advancing his kingdom. Like, the church is God's means for advancing his kingdom on this earth. And our generation is really excited about things like nonprofits and social justice. And that's a great thing. Like, I love nonprofits in our city. I used to work full-time in the nonprofit world. My wife does, so I love nonprofits. I don't want nonprofits to close because that would affect my family. So I love nonprofits, but the church, more than nonprofits, more than schools, the church is God's means for advancing his kingdom here on this earth. So if you're a Christian, you should care about the church, and you should be involved in a healthy local church that cares about planting other healthy local churches. And one thing that I think is really important, I think this hits on the second part of the question, is when we look around Memphis, I know all the men up here, as we look around Memphis, we see a lot of churches that that have lost the value of renewal, right? Renewal is a really important concept when you read all of the Bible, and renewal is going to happen through the church. So there are a lot of churches in Memphis who are preaching the gospel. They love the Bible, but they don't really care about the city, and they've left the city. And there are a lot of, I don't know what we would call them, but there are a lot of church organizations in the city who care about the city, but they don't care about the Bible or the gospel or really love the Lord. And so we need kind of a marriage of both of those things again. And so the church vitally connects with the city and renewal in the city. And you as a Christian, if you're in college, if you're out of college, if you're not in college yet, you should have a deep love for the local church.
Well, hey guys, I'm Barrett, and pastor here at this church. I just want to say welcome. We're really glad y'all are here. And I know people from Texas love Texas. Is that right? Yeah, all the little hand signs. I don't know what they are.
Oh. Hey, guys, we're Christians now, okay?
Yeah.
Don't destroy his car.
He just went there, sorry. But anyway, I was going to say, I know you guys love Texas, but I really do hope that your time in Memphis has been transformational in your life. And I do hope that your eyes are being opened to needs beyond your great and awesome state. I do agree, you have a great state. But I do hope your eyes are being open to other needs and other opportunities, and know that if you ever find yourself wanting to be a part of what's happening in Memphis, we would welcome you, not just here at ICC, but as a church community, those of you who are feeling called that way. And I do believe some of you may be feeling called toward church planting and just being involved as just a great Christian worker who wants to do good wherever you are, being involved in a great church plant. So just know we would love to have you here. And we're glad you're here tonight. The donuts were good, by the way, Jeff. Thanks for putting these together. Lemon poppy seed, that's where it's at.
I didn't taste that.
I will say, you know, Michelle, my wife and daughter are in the back. And we first got involved with ICC, not even thinking about leading the church. We just wanted to be a part of a really good church in the downtown area. We had moved to downtown Memphis from another city, and honestly, we got here and we were here to do school. And in this area, in the downtown, it's changing now. But when we got here, there was like you ask somebody, "Hey, where can we go to church?" And everybody recommended a church that was like 30 minutes away. You know, and there were great churches 30 minutes away, but we kind of had this longing to be a part of our community. It's like, well, we live down here, and we'd really love to know believers down here and have a church that cares about this community, kind of gets and speaks and lives our culture. And for us, it was like really motivating to get involved in Island Community Church, which you wouldn't even recognize it at the time when we first got there, because it was just a hodgepodge group of people meeting in a little school. But it was so good because it was a church that cared about reaching the people downtown and reaching our neighbors and serving our neighbors and working toward redemption in the areas that we lived, worked, and played. And that was really, really important to us. And we were doing other things. I was working retail, supporting my way through school, and Michelle was pursuing medicine in school. And, you know, you don't have to be a pastor to be involved in church planning. You know, you just get involved in a local church who loves Jesus and who's winning people to Jesus and who preaches the Bible and is living together in community and really serving well. And you can plug in there and make a huge difference and invest your life and invest your gifts and your talents and your skills and your time and your money so that a church can grow and thrive in those communities. Statistically, new churches are vital to reach new people. Old churches, once a church gets to about 10 years old, it just statistically does a worse job reaching new people for Jesus. You typically start seeing people transferring in from other churches, but not reaching new believers, converting the lost to Jesus. And I think that's all of our passion. New churches are just great at that. And also great at reaching new communities. I mean, the downtown community here in Memphis has changed drastically in the last 5 years. And there are different kinds of people who live here now than they did 5 years ago. And so a new church could be needed, even though we're here across the street to reach a new community that maybe we're not so good at reaching and to win people that maybe we're not so good at winning. And we need to be, but the reality is new churches are good. Statistics say, if you have a church for every 10,000 people, you will see about 1% of those people come in to the church. If you have a church for every church for every 1,000 people, you will see about 10% of people come into the church. But if you have a church for every 500 people, you will see 40% of that 500 come into the church. What that says is it's not, proportionally linear. It's exponential growth. The more churches there are per capita. And so even a church area that's saturated with people and churches still needs more churches because there's more people to reach for Jesus. Does that make sense? So you can make a difference, pastor or not. Just get involved.
You seem like you have something.
I would just say the phrase average Christian, it's not that healthy. Because if there are average Christians, then average Christians attend institutional churches where you can go on a Sunday, sit in the back, write a check and then leave. Like that's what I think of the average Christian. And our church plants, we know people by name when they come in, and even though we would never say we keep attendance, we all keep attendance, right? We know who's not there. And right. So we don't allow for average Christians. And I think that that's something that's super healthy as well. What I would love to see is every church get to about 200, 250, and then send out 20 or 30 to plant the next church. Because about 200 and 250, you start not feeling the love of the church anymore. And some churches are the exception. I get that. But for the most part, just the idea that there even could be an average Christian means we need more church plants.
So I'm going to hit on this next question. All right. The bulk of the world's population has become urban, city dwellers, okay? What type of implications does that have on Christians and the church and how we go about being missional and doing ministry in our present culture?
Yeah, so that's statistically, if people are moving into cities, you can look at through the Bible, you can look at throughout history, as cities have been built up. Tim Keller is really helpful on this. If you want to just Google his name and type Tim Keller, the city, you can read a bunch of awesome stuff on a guy who's got a great theology of the city. And he talks about how cities are just these centers of influence and of impact. And if you guys have ever been of creativity, of culture, of anything like that, if you guys have ever been, when you come to a city, there's just something different about it when you all of a sudden you're just merging different people and different cultures and different backgrounds and different experience and education and everything. You put them all in this one hub and everybody kind of feeds off everybody else, and it creates this kind of really cool ripple effect in a lot of ways, where the things that happen in the city touch kind of everything out of it. And so that's why, this is a poor example, but it's what I'll say. It's like fashion, start in L.A. and New York and make its way from L.A. and New York to Chicago and then finally show up in a Memphis or a Lubbock or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's that kind of tier. And so cities historically are just centers of influence. And so as we think about, the strategy of the Great Commission, and if our mission, and he makes a great point about there's no such thing as an average Christian. If it's our mission, it's y'all's mission. If it's the mission of the vocational minister, it's the mission of every single Christian. The Bible, I would argue, says nothing about calling. It's not some people are called to be pastors and some people are just called to show up and give. We're all called. It's the priesthood of all believers. It's 1 Peter. we're a new nation and a new priesthood, and we've all been sent forth on mission, and we're all working towards the same things, and we all play different roles within that. But if it's our mission as pastors or whatever, it's y'all's mission as teachers, doctors, lawyers, whatever. But anyway, back to the city, like, it's just a place of influence. And so as you are involved in those places, and you guys see that in college, you know, you're meeting people for the first time that weren't like the people that you grew up with, you know what I'm saying? And they're influencing you. And so the city does this really cool thing where, you know, people are allowed to hit each other, kind of like, you know, atoms or whatever. And there's a recoil, I guess, after that.
Yeah. The only thing I would add is the cities, probably most of us aren't urban people. We've lived suburban lives. I grew up here in Memphis, but there's some differences to urban life than it is in suburban life. And the one thing when you talk about missional is the way people connect is different. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get anybody to come to your church. They're just not going to do that as prevalent as much as they would in the suburbs. You've got to expose your life to people. And so I think that's the most difficult aspect. I think urban people are much better at doing that than we are as Christians, be honest. I mean, I have non-Christian friends that I've learned so much about how to connect with people. I mean, they just have all kinds of people at their house, and they live in the city. They're just much better at doing that. They understand how to maneuver in the rough, you know, streets of the city with the diversity around them. And I think as Christians, because most churches are what? On the outside. Mm-hmm. And so we don't really know how to engage the urban setting. But like it's saying, people are moving back to the urban. So the more we invest out there, the church is going to even shrink more because more people are going to be here. And so one thing we're trying to do as an individual is to allow my life to be open to my neighbors and the people around me, not just to create this bubble life. Another thing that it's teaching me is that we have to become comfortable with people who are vastly different than we are, not just culture, because I know you're going to deal with diversity, but morally, ethically, all that stuff. Learning not to freak out. Like my non-Christian friends, they took us to the roller derby here in Memphis. It is, I mean, have you been to Drew? Okay, you need, yeah. It's very interesting. I mean, I was amazed, but it taught me so much. I'm sitting here with two ladies who are married and, you know, talking about a church that they're going to. And I'm learning that we can have a conversation. And I could get to know this person, and I don't have to convince them that their lifestyle is wrong. I mean, we have to figure out how to engage with people, and it takes time to be able to do that in the urban setting. And I'm not saying that suburbs are any different in that way, but what I'm just trying to say that we've got to really get into people's lives. It's going to take a lot more time, and we really just got to be comfortable being human like everybody else here. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you understand what that means. I mean, I'm learning how to be human and just, you know, walk to the store, meet people on the streets, you know, and then slowly, but this is the thing that I've learned. They can handle our Christianity if we're comfortable with it. They're cool with it. I mean, so they're not requiring you to change who you are. They just want you to be around them and not be weird about it. And through that, I've learned that you're able to build better relations. And I think that's what is marked different than in the urban setting, I think.
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, there's tons of books on this stuff, but it's a theology of incarnation. You know, anywhere, whether it said urban, suburban, international cities, whatever. I mean, the way to reach a place is to be there and to be a part of it, even when the Israelites are in exile. God tells them, you know, be the incarnation, right? Be there, plant fields, put your children through the schools, you know, become part of the city. And like he was saying, I mean, it's a light on a dark hill. You know, if you have the gospel inside of you and you're living the benefits of the gospel, people are going to come running, right? Not because you put a sign out that says, here's our church, but because when death hits something and you're the one that's not mourning the way that non-believers mourn, they're going to ask you about that, right? Peter says, be prepared. And it's just incarnation. It's the way Jesus reached out to us.
Good. Touch on it. Talk about what it looks like, because I know a lot of the people in the audience here are in a place where they're transitioning, you know, and they're thinking about marriage. They're thinking about, you know, career and all those type of transitions. Do I want to move and live here, or do I want to live there where I'm going to start my family? But I want to live, make an impact for Jesus, whatever I do. Give a word to our audience in reference to those things.
Did Martel just, like, bridge some awkward conversations happening? Is that what happened? I don't know. Yeah, I would say no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, no matter what stage in life you're in, if you're a Christian, you should absolutely be on mission. Like, I know Lubbock may not be as urban as Chicago or New York City, but you can be on mission at your college campus. Do everything you do with intentionality. Like, what would that look like if you went to the coffee shop and you were intentional about who you are, who you're interacting with? I'm a follower of Jesus. What I believe that means is God's Spirit dwells in me. I'm at our church, we're actually working through a sermon series on Leviticus, as crazy as that may sound. But one thing that we're learning is God's presence is going forth in the world through Christians, that we as Christians are walking, talking temples. We're places where heaven and earth meet. So through us, people get to interact with the divine. Like, what would your days look like if you walked around, if you walked to class, if you walked to the coffee shop, if you walked to the cafeteria at night, and you had that sort of mentality and perspective? Like, everything would be different. So no matter what you're doing, married, not, college student, out of college, not in college yet, do it with intentionality. Do it on mission for the glory and for the fame of Jesus is what I would encourage you to do.
That's good. All right, we have another question. How does the gospel inform where I choose to live, work, play, serve? What examples of these decisions and how they impact culture in the cities that we live? Like, how does those decisions really impact things for Jesus?
So this is something our church, Mud Island. Have y'all been to Mud Island yet? Oh, you got to take them to Mud Island. Mud Island's kind of cool. It's like an island in the middle of the Mississippi River. It's really not an island. It's a peninsula, but it sounds cooler to say an island because it would be weird to say Mud Peninsula.
True.
We have Mud Island. In our community, we largely have transitional people. It's people who are like in the season you're in, except most of ours are in the next season, like more like graduate school. They're getting their MDs and their PhDs and their master's degrees and stuff like that. But still, they're transitional. They're in the middle of, 3 to 5 years of training. Most are not from Memphis, and they're not going to stay in Memphis. So we get them for a little bit, and we want to see them transformed and then sent out to impact the world. But I'll say to you what I say to them all the time, to our church and those who are in transition, is that you really need to rethink your life according to the gospel and not according to the American dream. You really need to have a gospel dream for your life. I'm all about you, I want you to be successful and happy, and I want you to have what you need and taken care of. I want your kids to have a good education, and you to be healthy and all those things, whatever. I'm not saying like go die today, but what I am saying is sometimes I think we do get so wrapped up in just what the normal trajectories are of our, of our peers, or what the world says is aspirational, or what looks attractive and what looks comfortable, and just those normal trajectories you can just get swept up in. It's just part of our culture. But the reality is the way that we should evaluate success is not based on what America says is successful, but what God says is successful. And you've got to really wrestle through that personally. Like, what does it look like to be successful at the end of every day in God's eyes? What does it look like to really live according to God's dream for your life and for your life really to count? And what I find is that a lot of people make decisions. They end up in careers, or they end up moving to neighborhoods, or they end up, just even people in our church, it frustrates me sometimes when people choose to leave, and they leave because of a better job in another city. And I'm like, but you're in a great city, and you have a good job. Like, granted, they offered you a better job, but this job is good. Like, it's taking care of your bills, and, like, there's needs in this community. Like, why would you leave here, you know? And then, you know, I typically get over it. I'm like, send them off with a smile on my face and wish them well. And I know that that's part of what God is doing with our church, is preparing people for somewhere else. But I also want to, I challenge people to think, why wouldn't you come to Memphis? Like, why wouldn't you stay in Memphis if you're already here? You know, why wouldn't you go to inner city areas and live your life there? I mean, you're going to have a good life no matter where you live. Y'all are a great group of people. You look good and you're smart. You're gonna have a great life, just because God's in you and He's for you. Mm-hmm. But why not spend your life in places where there's greatest gospel need? Why not? Why not look and strategically evaluate where you're gonna take the next job and how you're gonna make decisions about the offer that comes your way, or the family that wants you to go to move closer back home because they like being near the grandkids? And you know, if that's how you're going to live your life, I'm not saying people who do that are all wrong. I'm just saying I think God wants us to really make decisions about our life based on the things that are on His heart.
Right.
And especially with this question about cities, I mean, 200 years ago, 5% of the world lived in cities. Today, 50% of the world lives in cities. And they project by 2050, 80% of the world are going to live in cities. People are moving to cities. And what we need is, it seems like in Memphis, the history of Memphis, you guys know this, the churches left the city. The Christians, as the cities grow more paganistic and more relativistic and just frustrating for Christians, and the schools get worse, things like that, Christians are leaving. But where do, and you look at the Bible, Christians don't leave areas that need the Lord, that are getting worse. Christians go to areas like that. And so why would we flee to the suburbs when the greatest needs are in the city? Mm. So I encourage you just to think about what is success in your life and in your career and what God's called you. And define it according to His terms and not our country's. I pray it moves you to places you never thought you'd be.
Does anybody have a story in relation to this question about how, you know, you chose to, you know, hang out here or play here or go to work here, and it's made an impact for the Lord?
I mean, I could say, I grew up in Memphis, born and raised. Memphis, usually when you talk to people about Memphis, the people that hate Memphis the most are Memphians. So that's, you know, I got an applause from a Memphian. That's pretty standard. And so, And the more you get out of the city, the more people hate it. And so kind of started off in Memphis, and family moved to the suburbs. And so spent most of my time growing up in the suburbs and growing up. And pretty much every single person that I was tight with and good friends with, like, going, I'm never coming back. Memphis in the rearview mirror, deuces. Because of the pain, because of the brokenness, because of, you know, just the mess that I guess is kind of the perception of Memphis. Kind of a unique piece of my story and a unique piece of the story of Memphis is, and I think we're going to get there in a second, it's just the issues of race and racism and racial reconciliation and things that have happened here in the city. And that's something that I am deeply and uniquely passionate about, is to see people across racial lines and across ethnic lines and cultural lines come together for the sake of the gospel, because the gospel calls us into one people. And I grew up playing basketball here, and I was not very good at basketball, but I could shoot. And I told my dad the other day that I really think the reason that God gave me the ability, my dad can't shoot a basketball, and he's the one who taught me to shoot a basketball, but I could shoot one. So it's just like, I really think the reason that God allowed me to be able to shoot a basketball was so that I would learn to interact and exist in environments that were different from where I was comfortable. And so from the age of, 10 or 11, I was the one white kid on all these all-black teams that had no business playing on. And it was so much, it was just like for the first time, you know, and like my eyes were open to the world was just bigger than what I knew and what I saw around me at school, maybe. And, man, had this passion, desire, frustration, I don't know what the word is, like why could we do Monday through Saturday together? And why could we play ball? And why could I go to practice five nights a week with these guys? And then on Sunday morning, we were in two different places. You know, it was Dr. King who said 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in America. Like, I didn't even know what the word, just sad. Like, and so it was like, when I was thinking about being in Memphis, when I was thinking about coming back to Memphis, and I'm not saying that this was like a, I'm not saying that I don't even know how to say that, make a decision that I made that's impacted the kingdom in whatever great way, but I knew what I was passionate about, and I knew what the gospel propelled me towards. And when I look at that question, that's what I'm thinking, is it's like, what uniquely, when you think about the gospel, when you think about what Jesus has done in your life and how he saved you and what you're uniquely passionate about, like, that's not an accident that you're passionate about that. Like, that's not coincidence that you're passionate about, like, about that. Like, God saved you and you're probably passionate about that because you need to be involved in that. You know, and I'm not telling you to go do whatever you make that decision, but there's a theologian, his name's Abraham Kuyper, and he said that there's not one square inch over all of creation over which Jesus does not say mine. And that's what we see, that constant theme to the New Testament. If you read like Jesus' sermons, he doesn't just call us to the law, but he calls us to the law and then he calls us higher. And so not just to give one-tenth of our money, but all our money is God's. Not just to give, you know, Sunday mornings, but all of our time is God, and so is God's. And so I just think about, for me, I was uniquely passionate about this city, and I was uniquely passionate about watching God heal across racial lines. And this city 3 miles up the street from where Dr. King got killed was the eye of the hurricane. You know, it's like he said, you know, on like 9/11, I remember the firefighter. Christians should be the firefighters on 9/11, right? When everybody else is running out, we're running in. And I think that's what the gospel propels us to, I guess.
Let's stay on that that theme. We're talking about church planting and diversity. You guys can go to the next question. How does all of this relate to issues of social justice and diversity that we find in the city, and the disconnect that my brother's over here talking about, and how if we're the body of Christ and Jesus is bringing people together, how exactly does church planting relate to healing the brokenness in our cities?
Since I'm brown, I'll go first. Actually, all of us can speak into this equally. I think, first of all, when you talk about how does it, you know, relate to diversity, social justice, racial reconciliation, I think it begins, of course, with the gospel, because the gospel is bringing unity where sin brought separation. And when you don't see that unity, you're not seeing the gospel lived out. It's supposed to bring things together, not tear us apart. But I know there's deeper issues to that than just, you know, the message. So I would say, like, issues of diversity are huge because it's just being a good missionary. If you're going to be a missionary anywhere and you go to that culture and that country, you're gonna do things that are conducive to that culture, whatever it is. You're not going to go, I mean, some did in the past, but you're not going to go to Africa and plant a white church, and that the forms are going to be more European and Western. You wouldn't do that in India. You wouldn't do that in Iran. The problem is that Christianity is unique because every other religion is so strongly tied to a cultural form. I'd be hard pressed to find another religion that Islam's closely tied to the Arabic culture, Hinduism to Indian culture, Judaism of course to Jewish, but Christianity has always been cultureless in a lot of ways. In fact, you go to Acts, you can see where they battled this because they were trying to make them Jews, and so you don't have to be Jewish to be Christian, and so that brings a problem because. We don't have any natural forms that we have to force people to adopt. I don't have to force Arabic culture on someone to become a Christian. And so, but we don't get that. And so we go to a place and we shape the way we do church based on our own culture and not what's around us. And so because our cities are diverse, our neighborhoods are diverse, our churches should be more diverse. Because you want people to be able to come to your church and your congregation, your life, and not, you know, feel like this is not for them. And I think it has nothing to do with being pragmatic. It has everything to do with being a missionary. That's what you would do. We get that when you go overseas, but some reason here in America, we don't get that. And I think part of it is because there's so many churches, so we can create all our different flavors. But I think it's dishonest to the gospel, because I have a friend. Early on when we were planting Mosaic, we started in February as a small group, and we built it, and then, you know, started meeting on Sunday nights in the summer. There's an Asian young man, who's a good friend of mine, who began to track with us during that time, and he had an internal struggle because he grew up in Memphis, just like me, but at the Korean Baptist Church. But his life was not just Korean. It was part of it. I mean, I came from African-American background. My mom is from Iran. And so I grew up in many different cultures. And I could feel comfortable in any one of them. But he, in a similar way. So he grew up, you know, Korean, going to Korean Baptist Church. But he was a Asian hip-hop dressing dude. And he just hung out with a diversity of people. That was his. Those are the people he hung out with. So his life as a missionary was disconnected from his church because he can't bring them to his all Korean church. And I don't think it has to be that way. Especially as Christians, if being Christian meant we became Korean, then that's a different story. But so we don't, I think that there's room for an all African American church and expression and all Asian expression, but there should be, along with that, many, many, many more that just reflect the diversity around us. Because even a few weeks ago, he had a struggle with bringing a friend, a non-Christian friend was there, and he said, I would have connected to Mosaic. They would have been comfortable there, but I'm a Sunday school teacher at my Korean church. You see what's happening? We're separating our mission. So next door to me in Olive Branch, Mississippi, was a Hispanic family. Across the street was a few white families. One here was African-American family. All of those are my mission field. But if my church is all black, there's no way I'm going to be able to connect my Hispanic friends to that. And that's a disconnect that we shouldn't be having to have. That was Memphis came out a little bit, having to have. But that's really... Beyond just all the other issues of diversity, I think for us, when we envisioned a Mosaic church, we wanted a place where everybody felt like they can fit in and everybody felt like they didn't in a way. So that we all sacrifice. So in any given Sunday, we'll have different languages. We have about 6 or 7 languages represented at our church, including English somewhere in there. And then, so any given Sunday, we will, in a small way, we'll have the scripture read in different languages, Polish or Russian or English or Spanish, more Spanish because it's more Spanish-speaking people. But it has created a place where it's neutral in some ways. Not completely, but it's becoming more like that. So that it's not weird to bring an Asian friend. It's not weird to bring a Hispanic friend. It's not weird to be an African-American friend to this place. I think that because of the mission field and because of the culture around us, we have to be able to think that way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say real quick. I mean, so Ephesians 2:1-10 a lot of us are familiar with it, right? It says, and you were dead in your trespasses and sins, following the course of this world, following the prince of power. You were, but God, being rich in mercy because of the great love with which you loved us, saved us. For it is by grace you have been saved. Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. Some of us are familiar with that. What's next after that? So Ephesians 2, 11 to 22, Paul says, therefore, the dividing wall of hostility has been broken down, and Christ has brought you into one body. Like that wall of hostility, it's like a picture in the Jewish temple. There was walls where people that weren't of the Jewish race that couldn't cross that wall. And Paul says that that wall has been knocked down. It's been divided, and we've all been brought into one. Right when Jesus died, the temple curtain was torn so that all of us would have access to God. And Christ has brought us into one body, right? So the gospel, he calls us to there. In Galatians 2, it's just like a little one-off comment. And it's funny, Paul's talking, and he says that Peter... He basically had to get in Peter's face because Peter was hanging out with the Gentiles, but then when a bunch of Jewish people came, a bunch of people who were like him, he left. He wouldn't hang out with the Gentile people. He was scared to hang out with the Gentiles, and so he goes to hang out with the Jewish people. And Paul walks up to him and gets in his face and says, and what does he say? He says, "You are walking out of step with the gospel." Hmm. He doesn't say, "Hey, be friends with the Gentiles." Hey, white dude, be friends with the black people. Hey, get to know them. That's white people's, like, favorite. I'm not a racist phrase, too. Like, I'm white, so I can say that. Like, I'm not a racist. I got black friends. Like, but he doesn't say anything about, hey, go make friends across. He says, you're walking out of step with the gospel. Literally, the gospel propels us to diversity. The gospel propels us to, and Ali said it, and it's awesome, to being uncomfortable for the sake of our brothers and sisters. And if I can, to white people, we are really welcoming often to black people as long as they'll conform to the way we want to do things. So you're welcome at our church. You're welcome at in our small group. You're welcome to come worship with us as long as you're cool with doing it our way. And at what's awesome about fellowship is we're like 60-40 white, black. And Ali just said it. Is it like every week, if you come to Fellowship Memphis and you say, and if I walk in on Sunday and I say, man, that was awesome. That was exactly the music I wanted to hear, played exactly the way I wanted it played. Like, and the message was exactly the length and exactly what I wanted to hear and whatever else, then we missed it. Because that week we hit 25-year-old white guy and nobody else. And so the gospel propels us to one body. The gospel propels us to cry with one another, to bear one another's burdens, to walk with one another, all those things, to listen when Michael Brown gets shot. And to not just write people off, right? The gospel propels us to listen when Eric Garner gets killed and not just write people off. And it invites those conversations to happen, and to happen in a way that's helpful because they're centered around the love of Christ. And I'm going to stop.
And I think what's missing in all that is just the word responsibility. I mean, the gospel is a joy, right? And when we feel like it's a responsibility, it's the same way we feel like sweeping at our house. Like, we're just going to do it because it's something that needs to be done. And a lot of church planning now is, let's be diverse because it's our responsibility. But that's not going to last. What's going to last is the passion that we feel from knowing that Jesus brought good news and that Jesus reached out to people in the margins and that Jesus created this diverse church and he's still the Lord of this diverse church and that Jesus was not white or black. You know, I mean, the God that's going to fix our white and black problems in Memphis isn't black or white. I mean, that's really neat. And so the church, we need to learn, I think, to carry that more joyfully. You know, like, we really do have good news for Memphis. And when you look at the good news of the gospel, race plays an even smaller part in that. And so people that are suffering injustice because of race, man, we have great news to tell them, you know? And I think that just that word responsibility, that doesn't sound fun to me at all, you know? But when I think about my own sin and how Jesus saved me, I mean, that it goes beyond responsibility into just pure joy, or it should at least.
Let's go to the next one then. What type of impact does a unified Christian community have on the city? And have you seen that demonstrated here in Memphis in any type of special way?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually moved to Memphis 5 or 6 years ago from Texas. Yeah, so I love your state. Honestly, I grew up and had a lot of friends from Texas in college. And I would often, if I'm just being honest with you, I'd be frustrated with their, it seemed to me at the time, annoying love for Texas. I'll just say that. And then after college, I moved to Texas for a few years. And I'm like, man, I get it. I get it. I love this place. So I've lived a few different places. And I would say that Memphis, unlike any other place I've ever seen or encountered, there's just a unique, amazing, I think God-honoring and God-given unity here in our city. And this is, I think even this is a picture of it. Like these men really are my brothers. And I love, like we're in the Midtown area, we're doing something right now called Memphis Prayer Collective, where we're doing several worship services together. You guys know, y'all are staying at the building, right? Yeah, you see Living Hope? Okay, so you go upstairs and there's a prayer room and all these different churches are gathering together to pray together and worship together, and it's not about lifting up any single church or personality. So, man, what gospel unity, which is, man, one reason I would say, yeah, that one reason I would say you guys, maybe you're seeing it this week, but you should really be excited about what's happening in Memphis. And maybe not want to come be a part of this. If you do, that's great. Come on. But take this elsewhere, too, because there is amazing unity happening in our city among Christians and nonprofits. And I don't know what else to accredit to other than the Lord being at work and his goodness. So it's really fun to be a part. Really fun that I can sit up here with these dudes. And it's not about competition, like trying to get people to Christ City Church. You know, I love what all these fellas have going on in their churches. And I praise God for that. Barrett and I were talking in the lobby before this about when we have people coming to our churches and they're driving 30 minutes, we have conversations with them like, hey, you guys are driving by 10 healthy local churches on your way here. Consider going to be a part of Living Hope or Fellowship East or something. Like, we love these other local churches and want to be about the kingdom together. So I love it. That's a great question.
Barrett, I'm going to let you have the last swing on this question, and then because I want to open it up for our brothers and sisters out here to ask you guys some questions and to glean from y'all wisdom. So take a swing at that, brother.
I'll just say, you know, I think it's what Drew just alluded to, and there's not much more to add. I think when churches are focused on mission, you're not going to be competing, you know. We, you know, especially I love what goes on in the inner city here in Memphis, because there's so few real gospel-centered, mission-oriented churches down here that when you see each other, it's just like, brother, encourage me. I'll encourage you. You know, we just, like, get excited when we see each other and get excited to hear all the stories of what's happening, even across the street and down the street, you know, because, like we just talked about, we need so many more churches in this very neighborhood alone, you know, that all we have time to do, really, is celebrate what Jesus is doing and bringing more people to himself. And who cares where that happens? Because in heaven, there's not going to be ICC section and Living Hope section or Christ City section. It's just, we're just going to love Jesus together. So we're really more one church than we are a divided church. And when you're living on mission, you really, I think, see that more clearly. And I encourage you, if you ever get to a point in your life where you're in a church that, you know, you're part of a culture where there's frustration because other churches are growing more, or there's that sense of competition, and when one does something, you've got to up the ante and blah, blah, blah. That's just silly. You know, do your part in leading the group that you have influence in to refocus on mission. Mm-hmm. Because I really think that kind of mentality is more, that division is more indicative of hearts that really aren't centered in the gospel and in gospel mission that we need to be doing together. And hey, when you start, you know, I just want to say this, because I don't know if I have another chance to say it. But I also want to call your attention to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we try to get everybody in our church overseas once a year. And there's a reason. I want you to go overseas once a year. You need to have a bigger perspective than just the U.S. U.S. is lost, but I'm telling you go into the world is even more lost. And so when you feel like you can't reach anymore where you are, then go somewhere else. start a new church, you know? You be a part of starting something new for the lost there. There's just no time to fight among the same old groups of people. We have so many church plants in the suburbs here. And all they're doing is just taking people from other churches. And I hate to tell them, they're not church planting. They're just church stealing. They're church dividing. When you church plant, you win new people to Jesus. And when you're winning new people to Jesus, and that's your focus all the time, then all you can do is celebrate what everybody's doing, because the church collective is growing.
Powerful. So. Powerful. So, some of these brothers down here. All right, guys. I want to open it up for you guys to ask any questions. I know there's a lot of things you've been processing over the last 50 minutes. I just want to give you guys a chance to glean.
Honestly, like for like women who like are single and like aren't, you know, looking to go internationally or whatever, how can you say that? I mean, I'm sorry. In what ways could you say that single students, single adults, single older people could have a larger role in being missional and being intentional in church planting culture when it just seems like such a like a collective kind of thing? Does that make sense? Like, it just like.
So are you guys understand what she's trying to ask? Yeah. Or what she's asking?
Yeah, I would say first, this microphone sounds different. As a leader in the church, I do want to issue an apology to single people. I do feel like sometimes single people feel like, you know, the ideal is that we get married and have a family, and that's what's important here, and that's a lie. Single people are important and are equipped for mission in a unique way. And we love single people at our church and in Memphis and at all of our churches. So if you're single, I apologize if you've felt that way, and I'm sorry for you. And I would say this. First of all, this is such a passion of mine. Is I would strongly encourage everyone, if you're a follower of Jesus, even if you're a college student, to pursue church membership. I don't know what that looks like at your church, but vitally important for you to pursue church membership. If you want to be a leader in your church, if you want to, as a single person, married person, dating person, whatever it is, if you want to make a difference and be a part of what's happening, then you really need to lock arms officially and say, hey, we're about this covenant family. We're gonna be a member. I see a lot of nods, so maybe that's something that you guys emphasize. Yeah, yes, that's awesome. So that's what I would say. I apologize, single people. I'm sorry for the way that the church in America, especially the church in the South, of which Texas is a part, makes you feel sometimes, and church membership.
And I would say, as a father of three under four, my mission has gone largely from Starbucks and college campuses now to the Chick-fil-A, and we're at Chick-fil-A all the time. Keenan knows that, so we're reaching people at Chick-fil-A. It's not about right or wrong or better or worse. It's really about what he's saying, intentionality, and I echo the apology, because I mean, it's just, you know, it's unique. Once somebody gets married, your view of life changes through your marriage. And once you start having kids, even my faith is now viewed through my kids. And it's just, it's unfortunate.
What church are y'all with? Redeemer Lubbock, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I looked at y'all's website. Y'all are trying to plant 20 churches by the year 2020. Y'all got seven current church plants right now. What would it look like for you to graduate at your school and go plant a church with somebody? Like, just because you're not on the website under the little leadership tab that says you're whatever, like, no church gets planted just because one guy's got the vision. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, I'm thinking about it like, and I'm not too far, I'm like 25, so I'm not that too far ahead of y'all. Like, I'm thinking, man, if I had been thinking about church planting at 18, 19, 20, what would it have looked like for me to launch out at 22 out of college in a church that believes so deeply in church planting? And not only are you guys trying to plant 20 churches on your own, but y'all are also a part of Acts 29, which is like 450 50, 500 churches on six continents, and y'all have ties to all of those churches, what would it look like to graduate college and be like, from the very beginning, from the get-go, from the start, my life is going to be about the mission. And I'm gonna go, and so I'm gonna go to wherever. I mean, y'all got right now, and you go on your website, y'all got seven church plants that y'all are trying to plant, and y'all got guys that y'all are training up and planting out, and they're trying to create core teams of people that are gonna be on mission with them wherever they go. And if they're going to Dallas, like, man, I'm gonna get a job in marketing in Dallas and plant this church for the kingdom of God. And you guys uniquely, like, young, single, like, opportunities that, I mean, Jesus was single and Paul was single, so you're in good company. Yeah. Like, so it's got nothing to do with, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just your own mission or you're not. So from the get-go, you guys have this awesome opportunity to be on mission, and it's right where y'all are at Redeemer Lubbock, training up a bunch of people that would be desperate to have a 22-year-old who's on fire for the Lord who wants to go do that.
I would add, you know, Paul was single, but he still gave marital counseling, and he still knew the gospel well enough to know that the marriage mm-hmm. is a picture of the gospel. And so, I mean, when I was in college, I wasn't helping any married people out. So I would charge you guys, you know, whose marriage are you helping to strengthen? You know, go babysit some kids or pay for a date or do something. You know, just because you're single doesn't mean you're against marriage, right? And in the same way that you want married people to help out single people, you guys get to stay up past 8 o'clock, and I don't even remember what that's like. So you guys, you have a lot of help to offer.
Any other questions out there?
I have one. I don't know what your name is. Yes, Josh. I'm also very passionate about racial reconciliation. And something that I've struggled with is, like, having that passion misread as radical in a way, and radical in a negative sense. And so something that I was curious about, I know that you said that you haven't planted a church yet, but how would you envision that in light of a church and in light of a gospel community?
You bring people into the conversation. And so if I was going to, in Memphis, I just use white and black because that's what we know mostly here, and there are a bunch of other populations, not saying that this Memphis isn't more diverse than that, but overwhelmingly white and black. And so, man, if we're going to plant a diverse church, like, it doesn't need to be me and Drew and Jeff in a room going, yeah, we're really going to plant a diverse church for the city of Memphis. Like, I need Martel in the room, and I need Ali in the room, and I need, even though Ali's not black, I didn't mean that. Like, you're not black, are you? You're not black, are you, right? Well, right, but you're not in Memphis, you are, but not really, right? Yeah, not really, though. But I need Martel in the room, and I need Kina in the room, and I need to hear where they're at. And the sad thing is that it can come across where black people are perceived as the angry black man or the angry black woman. And that is, like, a massive tragedy, because that's real stuff, and that's real. What's your name?
Kamisha.
That's real passion in your heart for that, you know. And so one of the sweet, I can only tell you about how we do it at Fellowship. Like, our body is probably 60-40. Our lead pastor until a couple weeks ago was a black guy, led by a black guy. Our staff is majority minority. So there's more African Americans or people of other ethnicities that are not white on our staff than there are white people. Leadership, like shared leadership, shared whatever. I need somebody in the room to say, hey, Josh, that's white people stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing white people stuff. We're doing gospel stuff.
Yeah. Thank you.
I want to encourage...
Yeah, guys.
I want to encourage just maybe just some from my experience is to, you know, when it comes to racial reconciliation, you always have to be a leader, you know. And so you're gonna encounter a lot of different perspectives on that, you know. One of my, the, a guy, I went to school in Conway, Arkansas, And I respect him as a professor, but he was against me marrying biracial. And he said that when I asked for counseling. And I didn't have bitterness towards it. I kind of understood the culture. And we, especially as minorities, we need to take the role as leader and recognize that there's a lot of ignorance on different sides. And it's like when you apply the gospel, you understand that you have it too, you know? And so that we don't come across, bitter. Or we just have to take the leadership. And I love that. I think that's what we have to think about. As minorities, we should think about how can we become the leader in helping others to see things differently. Mm-hmm. And when we do receive those kind of feelings from people, you don't just push it aside, but you absorb some of it. Mm-hmm. And in grace, pray that God will change that, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
And I think it's our responsibility as majority culture to go to bat for diversity, to go to bat for other races to have a voice and a seat at the table. Anyway, I could go all night.
Let's get one more question. Our time is really burnt. Y'all can ask some questions after we end the sound.
Hi. You kind of touched on it on a church level, but I just kind of want y'all to talk about a smaller level. Like in our church, we have gospel communities, just small groups that meet every week. And how would it look in a gospel community of that size to include more diverse cultures and more multicultural environment? What would that look like? What's y'all's ideas on that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would say we're our church is learning from these guys in that, and Martel and so many other people. So I'm speaking as someone who's not killing it or knocking it out of the park like these guys are. But one thing we do is we also at Christ City Church, we have missional communities. We call them parishes. And they're in various communities, and we try to just study the culture of that community. And so one thing we see is we have one parish that serves a neighborhood called Mitchell Heights, which is mostly African American. And one thing we learned is unlike suburban white people, people in this neighborhood, they don't grill out in the backyard, but they grill out in the front yard. And so two people in our missional community live in that neighborhood in two different houses, and we have what we call a family meal twice a month. And one time it'll be at this house, a grill out in the front yard, and we buy a bunch of hot dogs, and then the next time it'll be at the next house. And so just being a student of the culture, I think, is really important in your gospel communities, engaging those around you, be in the neighborhood where you're at. And I do think while pursuing diversity is an important gospel issue, be a part of the neighborhood you're at. I think it's okay if you're in an all-white neighborhood to be there, to be pursuing diversity, listening, tearing down those walls of hostility. But it's also okay to be a part of the neighborhood you're at. Is that what you guys? What would you guys say to that? Mm-hmm. And feel free to, yeah.
True.
Right now, if you come on Sunday to fellowship with us, we've got 400 people coming to an hour.
Guys, I really appreciate you guys coming out. I got to spend some time with you guys early in the week, you know, and you guys were wonderful to some of the kids that I connect with over in North Memphis. So I just want to thank you for that. I want to pray for you real quick, and we can head out, or you can talk to whoever you need to talk to. Father God, thank you so much for these men of God up here who have poured out their hearts and their lives for the gospel, and it shows so much in the wisdom that they speak, in the way that they come across. And I thank you so much for these young men and women in this audience who are passionate about you. And I pray that your spirit would be with them, that we would go in the power of the spirit, pursuing diversity, pursuing the advancement of your great commission, and just making Jesus famous in our cities, in our homes, in all of our relationships. So thank you for tonight. And I just pray that you would continue to bless our lives in Jesus' name. Amen.